This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, and the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 6 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder, before I get into today's mailbag episode, you can subscribe for this podcast by searching for Number Fire NFL Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And if you want, you can also look and search for Number Fire and find our Number Fire DFS feed, where you can get shows by Jim Sonnes and Brandon Gadula, two very, very smart guys that work at Number Fire. They have a show called The Heat Check. Jim also does a show called The Solo Shot, which is great if you're into MLB DFS. So search for Number Fire on iTunes or search for Number Fire NFL Podcast on iTunes. These shows will pop up. Subscribe so that you don't miss another one. Okay, let's get to the questions. This first one is from Curtis Stewart. He says, as a Penguins fan, be serious. Would you be more afraid of facing the Capitals or the Maple Leafs next round? I know that you guys came here for my football takes, but I am a Pittsburgh homer. I've said before, I'm born and raised Pittsburgh. It is impossible to not love the Steelers, Pirates, and Penguins if you are from Pittsburgh. So yes, I'm very excited about the Penguins, and I would rather face the Maple Leafs in the second round. I don't want to face Washington. Washington was the best team in the league this year. I understand that that's something that's been happening a lot. It happened last year as well, and they always choke in the playoffs, but they have Shattenkirk now. I do think the Penguins would be able to get behind that defense and play with and beat them with their speed, but the Pens being out being without Letang is a little bit scary. Maple Leafs don't have the experience. I think they'd be able to crush the Maple Leafs. I think if Washington goes out in the first round, the Penguins should coast to the finals, but I don't think Washington's going to lose. I think it's going to be a Pens-Caps series, and I think that the winner of that series could easily win the cup, and I hope that it's my Penguins. All right, now for some football questions. This first one's from Rob Dighton. He says, who will be the top wide receiver in the NFC East this year? It was a question that I read, and I thought, man, why are we asking this? But I think that there's some validity to at least wondering if OBJ is going to be the top wide receiver in that division this year. Now, I think it's still Odell Beckham. I know that they added Brandon Marshall. They have Sterling Shepard. There are mouths to feed in that offense, but it would be very surprising to me if Odell Beckham doesn't hover around that 25% market share spot. And if he does, it's 150 targets. And if Odell Beckham's seeing 150 targets, I don't care who the quarterback is. He's going to be a top fantasy asset. So I'm still giving it to Odell Beckham, but there are other guys in that division now who are really, really intriguing. You have Dez Bryant, obviously. Now, Dez would be the number two, but he's not going to see the kind of volume that Odell Beckham's going to see. The Cowboys play conservatively. They don't throw the ball a whole lot. Now, with that being said, Dez and Dak did look really good towards the second half of last season when Dez came back from that injury. From week 8 onward, and this does not include week 17 because week 17 is stupid with fantasy football. In 9 games, his final 9 games, only 3 of them, Dez scored outside the top 20. Now you might be saying, that doesn't sound very good. That 6 of his 9 games, nice, were top 20 performances. But it is really, really good. We look in terms of cumulative points all the time, but if you look at a week-to-week basis, it's not easy for especially a wide receiver to consistently score in the top 20. It's just not a normal thing that happens. Dez Bryant doing that in 6 of his final 9 games, nice again, is very, very impressive. I think that he still has the typical red flag that he does every single year, which is he's not going to see volume the way that an elite receiver, the way a Julio, OBJ, and Antonio Brown, the way that they see volume. Dez Bryant is not that, but he will score touchdowns, and if he's healthy, he'll probably score double-digit touchdowns, so he's still a very, very good wide receiver. He's just not at OBJ's level strictly because of volume. And then Alshon Jeffrey's there now, too, in that division. I hate the Eagles offense. I don't want anything to do with Alshon Jeffrey. He's going to be one of the most overvalued, overrated assets in fantasy football this year, in my opinion. There's just a lot of, I mean, they have Torrey Smith, they have Jordan Matthews. It's not a strong offense from a volume standpoint. It's not like they have a great quarterback. You know, it's not like Carson Wentz is Ben Roethlisberger or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. Carson Wentz, especially from a fantasy standpoint, could be a bottom half starting quarterback in terms of helping the rest of his team. And then you split the market share up, and Alshon Jeffrey is not in that desirable of a situation. He's just not. You have Zach Ertz too. I didn't even mention Zach Ertz. And then they're going to probably, you know, there's a chance that they draft like a Christian McCaffrey, and that's just more targets that are gone in that offense. So I can't put Alshon Jeffrey even at number three. My number three guy in that division actually ties into the next question, so I'll get to that first. This is from at Shakar Manor. He says, rank Washington's receiving options 1 to 5. Thanks. So this is where the number three in the NFC East comes into play, I think, and that's Terrell Pryor. I'm really, really intrigued by Terrell Pryor this season. Very intrigued. No player, according to our net expected points metric last season at wide receiver, should have had more touchdowns than he actually scored than Terrell Pryor. That's just regression analysis. Now, lots of that has to do with their quarterback play, but Terrell Pryor's production profile in terms of expected points was a lot better than the amount of touchdowns that he actually scored. Now in Washington, he gets Kirk Cousins, and he gets a team that just lost over 35% of their market share with Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. That means a lot of volume is going to be there for Terrell Pryor. And I think the number one thing we have to look at with Terrell Pryor is that he can get down the field. The dude is an athletic freak who can beat corners. We know this. He's going to play that DeSean Jackson role, but he has more upside than what DeSean Jackson has because he has crazy size. Among the 93 wide receivers with 50 or more targets last year, Pryor was 20th in air yards per catch. His yards after the catch were really bad, but you know, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they force-fed him the ball. And I mentioned this before, I believe, but on last week's mailbag episode, I think, with DeSean Jackson, but guys who get down the field are going to see lower yards after the catch rates. When you're throwing a deep ball, especially from guys like Cody Kessler, when you're catching deep balls from these guys, it's going to be difficult to have a lot of yards after the catch. Whereas Golden Tate catching the ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage has a lot of room to work with. That's why, you know, Golden Tate is a very, very good yards after the catch wide receiver. Don't get me wrong. But his numbers are, his strict yak numbers are inflated a bit because of where he catches the football. Terrell Pryor, though, per catch was 20th among relevant wide receivers last year per catch in air yards. Now, Kirk Cousins last season was number one in air yards per attempt. He put the air under the ball. That's the way the offense works in Washington. Incredibly, incredibly intriguing. I love Terrell Pryor. I don't think this is a hot take. This is genuinely how I feel. And you guys don't want to listen to the show and hear me just say conservative takes all the time. I want you guys to know what's going on inside my head. And inside my head, I'm thinking, based on the numbers, where he's going, Terrell Pryor is top 10 wide receiver upside. He certainly has downside. We have a 1-year sample of Terrell Pryor being a wide receiver. But his upside is crazy. The second pass catcher on Washington has to be Jordan Reed. You know, if he's healthy, he'll see 120 plus targets. But the problem is he going to stay healthy? Jordan Reed has had 6 documented concussions. 6. That's insane. And you know, unfortunately, that in football, not all concussions have been documented, especially if you go back to high school. It's scary. Jordan Reed has been concussed so many times, and he keeps missing time. So I'd be shocked if Jordan Reed plays all 16 games next year. And as a result of that, I think Jamison Crowder is a very, very good value. He was one of the guys in last week's mailbag episode that I talked about as a guy who finished outside the top 20 last year, who could finish inside the top 20 this year. Jamison Crowder does have touchdown regression coming, but the lack of receivers in that offense, or proven receivers, could combat that a bit. We could see a situation where there aren't many, especially if Jordan Reed goes down, there just aren't enough options for him to truly see touchdown regression. The team also doesn't have strong running backs, and even if they draft running backs, they're still not going to have a great running back group, which means they're probably going to be fairly pass heavy in the red zone. And that's good for Jamison Crowder. And then again, if Jordan Reed goes down, they play the same area of the field because Jamison Crowder's a slot guy. And he'll take a lot of those looks away that were going Jordan Reed's way. So I think Jamison Crowder and Terrell Pryor both are buys right now in redraft. Terrell Pryor, to me, has insane upside. Jamison Crowder, I think, has the floor of the two just because, again, we have a small sample size with Pryor. But both of them are really, really nice buys right now. And then from the fourth and fifth option, you have Josh Doctson and Brian Quick. You know, I obviously Brian Quick's numbers didn't look great because of where he's been throughout his career. But I still think that Josh Doctson's the guy that they want in that position opposite of Terrell Pryor. So I'll say Doctson's fourth and Brian Quick is fifth. But I think that that could flip-flop, you know, after the first three or four games of the season if Doxton either can't step up or if he continues to show health concerns. So that's how I'd rank them. I got Pryor one, Reed would be two, but I think that he's, you know, I also don't draft tight ends early generally, so I'm going to avoid Jordan Reed. So I'd put Jamison Crowder as my number two value there. And I think, you know, Pryor in that NFC East division, to tie back to the first question, I think he's the third best wide receiver in that division from a fantasy standpoint. And I don't think it's that close. Alshon Jeffrey, I am not touching this year. This next one is from Colin Benson, at Colin underscore Benson. He says, "You held on to Burkhead and Gillisley. Why is the world so cruel? What do you do with them?" So even though I'm assuming, Colin, that you asked this question while tilting into the abyss, I figured I'd answer it and give a take just on the entire situation. The Patriots showed us this week that they care about analytics. We already knew that, but if you're not convinced after what happened this week, and them getting Mike Gillisley, I don't know what to say. The two most efficient running backs last season, according to not only our metrics, but basically any other analytics site out there, were Rex Burkhead and Mike Gillisley. Mike Gillisley, over the last couple of years, has been the best running back from an efficiency standpoint that is in our database. He's been incredible. But now you have a problem from a fantasy standpoint, because fantasy is volume-driven. It's not efficiency-driven. So these guys are becoming a little bit more obsolete. You have Burkhead in the backfield. You have Gillisley in the backfield. Maybe they bring in another guy. I doubt they bring in someone substantial, but they have Deion Lewis back there still. James White is still there. I'm avoiding the situation. You have to avoid the situation. James White already puts a cap on a player's ceiling in that offense because he's such a good pass catcher. So you're not going to get as many points through the air with your running back in that New England offense. Obviously, LeGarrette Blount scored 1,000 touchdowns last year, and that balanced out the fact that he wasn't going to be a pass catcher for them. We can't bank on that kind of production for a running back. We just can't. We don't even know who that early down guy is going to be, and I would guess with both Burkhead and Gillisley, there could be some sort of rotation like we've seen in the past in New England. So overall, avoid that backfield. We might get a clearer picture closer to August, but given that it's New England, I don't think that we're going to get that picture, so I'm just generally avoiding the backfield altogether. Next question is from at FantasyADHD. This is from Josh, who, by the way, has some great MFL 10 tools and a website that he has. You can go check it out if you go check out his Twitter handle, at FantasyADHD. Some really, really cool data viz stuff. But he asked which surprise team could draft a quarterback in the first round of the draft. It's a good question. You know, I think that this is a situation where the quarterbacks from a consensus standpoint, aren't very strong. And so you're going to have to match not only as a quarterback going to potentially fall to a team, but that team has to also like that quarterback. Whereas in the past, it might be a situation where the team likes most quarterbacks that have first round grades. So they're fine with taking a couple of them. But, you know, I think we could have seen New Orleans do it. With that last pick that they got from New England, I'm not convinced that they do that because they need defensive help. And I think that they're most definitely in win now mode. So I would expect New Orleans to go defense with that 32nd pick. I think that if there's one team, I don't know if it's a surprise, but I could see the Giants doing it because the Giants have a fairly complete team. Eli's up there in age. You know, that draft class with Ben, Eli, and Phillip Rivers, all three of those franchises are now being associated with these rookie quarterbacks and these prospects. The difference is that Pittsburgh has pretty clear needs that they need to address. The Chargers are too high in the draft, I think, to reach for a quarterback like that when Phillip Rivers is still playing. The Giants are kind of in a sweet spot, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants maybe take one if one of their guys falls. That's a big if, because I think a lot of these teams don't even have first round grades on most of these quarterbacks, so I'd be shocked if even a team like the Giants did go after one of those guys. But you never know. Maybe a Trubisky falls. Maybe they're Mahomes people. Who knows? But I think that if there is a team, it would be the Giants. This is from Dave at FF Countdown on Twitter. He says, "What are your thoughts on a 5-year dynasty league? Who is your number one pick in that format?" Well, my thoughts are that you should treat the league the exact same way you would treat any other dynasty league. I know that's going to sound weird to some people, but I think in short and intermediate terms only with dynasty leagues. I cannot understand this notion that you need a franchise quarterback in a dynasty league because they play longer and for a longer period of time. The game itself of fantasy football is no different in a dynasty league than it is a redraft league. You're playing week to week. You're playing year to year. You don't win a championship for how many points you scored over a six-year span. You're playing each and every year. And on top of that, you think that you know way more than you do. It's like what my finance professor in college used to say in an intro to finance class. It's the most basic thing ever. It's that money now is more valuable than money later. And it's because, I mean, from that perspective, it's because of inflation and such. But from this standpoint, what your information that you have now is so much more valuable than the information that you think you know later. You know, you're going to go pick these rookies in a rookie draft. You think that you're getting the next Ezekiel Elliott with your top overall pick. That's just not how it works. Think of this intuitively. There are how many different difference makers, let's call them, I hate that phrase, in fantasy football each year at running back and wide receiver. How many? Maybe, let's just say, out of nowhere, this is completely random. Let's just say that there's 10 wide receivers and 10 running backs that are true difference makers at their positions each and every year. Do you think that all 20 of those players have come from high picks in rookie drafts? Of course not. Of course they haven't. It's just like the NFL draft. Sure, you have a higher chance of hitting early on, but it's not like every difference maker at the NFL level is drafted early. And the difference with fantasy football is that you're only concerned with four positions, really just two positions, because no one cares about quarterbacks and tight ends. You're only concerned with two positions. So if you know that, let's say, an early first round pick yields a Mark Ingram or that type of runner, then why are you hoarding these picks? I'll tell you why you're hoarding the picks, is because the way that you view rookie picks is that you know that everyone else in your league values them more, so you can get something out of them. Trade your rookie picks. Trade them. Just try it. Try it in the league. Always trade. Trade those rookie picks. Keep the dart throws, though. I like having the dart throws. I like, you know, throwing a dart at Aaron Jones this year. Throw those darts. But I'd much rather throw them than go all in for a guy like Leonard Fournette, thinking that he's the next Ezekiel Elliott, because that doesn't happen. It just does not happen. And even if Fournette ends up being Ezekiel Elliott, I know that I'm going to win in the long run with this process, because we think we know more than we actually do with really anything in life. So to answer the question, I would say maybe I would lean running back a little bit more with that first overall pick. Maybe in a regular dynasty league, I'd go OBJ, but in this, I'd go Le'Veon or David Johnson, maybe Zeke, maybe. But I would consider going those three running backs anyway with the first overall pick in a dynasty draft. That's just how that's how I think about dynasty leagues. I think that people overthink the hell out of dynasty leagues. It's crazy to me. The amount of good assets that these people will give up for a random first round pick is just mind blowing to me, because they'll look last season and say, oh man, this 2017 running back class is so good. I want all of these first round picks. And then the running backs go to the combine and they don't give us great combine numbers. And all of a sudden we're like, man, maybe this running back class isn't as good. Things change. Opinions change. Look at prospects and who people thought were going to be top fantasy assets a year ago. Things change all the time. Use that to your advantage. This next one is from Justin Freeman. This is an email. He says, league format, colon. My friends and I have a long-standing league, and every year we make a handful of minor tweaks. This year we adopted free agent auction budget, good job, and loved it. However, it is in our DNA that we are a standard scoring league. The PPR topic has been brought up year after year, but it's always dismissed. It is almost a source of pride that we remain standard scoring. The vast majority of ESPN leagues where we play are standard. All of your content is PPR based, as is most of the fantasy analysis community. Can you give me your stump speech for a PPR conversion in our league? Great question. I get this question a lot. The way that I kind of view it is that PPR adds a different dynamic that I personally enjoy, because it gives us another chance to take advantage of inefficiencies in the fantasy world. You know, for instance, people think that a PPR league means wide receivers are more valuable. What makes wide receivers more valuable is if you're starting three of them and you have an extra flex spot. Let's pretend that you don't have a flex spot. A PPR league doesn't make wide receivers more valuable because you're not starting a wide receiver over a running back, let's say. The only time it would make them more valuable is if you're comparing a wide receiver scoring output to a running back scoring output. What actually changes most with PPR leagues is running backs. Think of it this way. The top wide receivers in the league are going to catch, let's say, between 60 to 80 passes. 60 to 100 passes. The difference between top receivers in a standard scoring league to a PPR league is not that drastic. Sure, some guys are going to jump a little bit, but it's not that drastic. Where it's really drastic is at the running back position. You look at a two-down back who's catching 15 to 20 passes, and you compare him to David Johnson. David Johnson becomes even more valuable. David Johnson's out there catching 300 balls a year. He's not. But it seems like he is. That's really where you can find the inefficiencies in PPR leagues. And I see it all the time. I mean, I don't want to call it lazy analysis because I think it's just the way that our brains will naturally think. But PPR leagues don't make wide receivers that much more important. They only do if there's that flex spot. That just means that you should be slotting a wide receiver into that flex spot each week, which then means you're starting an additional wide receiver, which means the demand of the position is greater, which means you need that position more. And if you need it more, that means you need to spend more. So it's tough to say, hey, league mates, go to PPR so I can beat your asses even more. So instead, maybe talk to them about how industry thought leaders push PPR leagues for a reason, and that there's more strategy involved because you're looking at a new piece of information. And if you're the more inputs that you're looking at, the less variance you're going to have and the more skill there is to the game. And I think every league wants more skill in general, right? Next question is from Brian Witten. He says, loved the new podcast. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We are in a keeper auction league where you can keep any player for $5 additional per season. I have the following cheap young keepers: Stephon Diggs, Willie Snead, Deion Lewis, Thomas Rawls, Michael Thomas. Besides Thomas, do you see any of those guys being top tier players at their position in the next 2 to 3 years? I will say definitely not Deion Lewis and Thomas Rawls. Deion Lewis, I already talked about. That backfield is so crowded. I don't anticipate that changing much. Thomas Rawls, Seattle hates Thomas Rawls. Thomas Rawls is not going to be a Seahawk next year, I would guess. They sign Eddie Lacy to a one-year deal. He's going to be their early down back. Thomas Rawls might be mixed in. Thomas Rawls was not that good. He has like 2 games where he was good. That's very, very nice analysis from a guy who likes numbers, I know. Seattle just doesn't like Thomas Rawls. CJ Procise is the guy that you want in that backfield long term. So for me, it would be either Snead or Diggs, but Snead, I don't think, has the ceiling. He's not a touchdown scorer. He's not going to be. You already have Michael Thomas too, so you don't want to invest too much in that offense. Diggs is the guy that I would say you can continue to at least maybe buy one more year to see what happens. I mean, he still saw over 19% of the team's targets last season in only 13 games. He could easily just be a 120 to 130 target guy each year while Adam Thielen's across the field, stretching the field. So I think Diggs is in a good spot in that offense. He's going to be fed a good bit. I think that I would at least hold on to him for one more year and then kind of see how things go. This last one is from Justin Rao. He says, when looking at the Rams, how much improvement do you think we will see in their offense with McVay? What does it mean for Gurley and Woods? So it's hard to see like massive improvement with their current personnel. And it starts with Jared Goff. Jared Goff could be very awful. I think Jared Goff is not good. You know, I did a study a long time ago, but I did a study that showed how, generally speaking, we have a good idea of how good a quarterback is going to be based on his rookie season. People don't want that to happen, but it's true. And the teams that don't want it to happen are the teams who are in QB purgatory, they call it, where you have a quarterback who's good enough to get you to the playoffs, maybe get you to an 8-8 record, but he's not good enough to win you a Super Bowl or to help you win a Super Bowl. Andy Dalton is somewhat of a QB purgatory quarterback. Alex Smith is sort of a QB purgatory quarterback. It's fine to have those guys as long as the front office knows that they have those guys and they don't have this false hope. That's really what it comes down to. But generally speaking, rookie quarterbacks who are bad stay bad. There are some outliers, one of them being Alex Smith, who turned his career around. The other one being Drew Brees, who is now a Hall of Famer. That's a massive, massive outlier. And the third one is arguably Derek Carr. But you look at Blake Bortles, he was always bad. Matt Leinart was generally always bad. I mean, there's tons of guys who were just always bad. So I don't feel great about Jared Goff. Carson Wentz is kind of in the middle. I talked about that last week. But Jared Goff, I don't feel very good about. So that's strike one in that offense and me not feeling confident in them. Strike two, Todd Gurley might just be overrated. We work with these two metrics at NumberFire for running backs called rushing unexpected points per rush, which is basically how many points a running back is adding per rush, expected points. And then the other one is success rate, which is the percentage of positive runs a running back has or is giving to his team. So basically, success rate is a binary way of looking at is, you know, at each rush. Is this a positive play or is this a negative play? If positive, it's a success. If negative, it's a failure. Running is inefficient inherently, so a 40% success rate is average for a running back. Todd Gurley, despite his crazy efficiency his rookie year, had a little bit more than a 36% success rate during his rookie season. He had a really high efficiency, which screamed regression. Basically, what it was saying is that he was making a living off of big runs during his rookie season. And you can watch his rookie season and see just that. You want guys who are unicorns, who have high success rates and high rushing net expected points per rush averages. You want Mike Gillisleys, right? But you want them to be high volume guys. So Mike Gillisley doesn't exactly fall into that category. Todd Gurley this year, his success rate only dropped 1% despite his being so much less efficient. Todd Gurley just might not be that good. Todd Gurley's good. Look, like, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way. Todd Gurley's a decent running back. But I'm saying, when I say that good, I mean like top five in the league good. That just could be the case. And then when you compound the fact that they have no wide receivers. They have Jared Goff throwing the football. They have an offensive line that despite spending 35 picks on it the last 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, they still can't do anything and they still can't get any push. It's literally the worst situation for a running back in football. So number one, Todd Gurley, by the way, I should add, Todd Gurley's profile is sort of like an Adrian Peterson's, but Adrian Peterson's just better. Todd Gurley's profile is that high efficiency, low success rate. That's what Adrian Peterson did his entire career. And that people talk about it all the time, how Adrian Peterson always would be looking for the home run play. That's why we love Adrian Peterson. That's one of the reasons I think Adrian Peterson as a player might be slightly overrated. I don't know. Is that a hot take? Is that a hot take? I'm sorry. I didn't mean for your computer to light on fire there, but I don't think Adrian Peterson, he was never a receiver. He was a low success rate guy, which means he wasn't gaining these positive plays each and every run like some other running backs do. Sure, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Sure, he's a very, very good running back. I'm just saying, I don't view him the same way that other people view him. I'm going really, really off script here. Brett Favre's the same way. I don't view Brett Favre as being as good of a quarterback as other people do because I think they downplay his turnover issues. Regardless, Todd Gurley's in a really, really crappy situation. So in general, can McVay help this offense? Sure. I think I could help that offense. That offense was putrid last year. Do I think that he's going to help them enough for them to be super fantasy relevant? No. I cannot fathom taking Todd Gurley in the first two rounds of a fantasy draft. I could not do it. I would take Lamar Miller over Todd Gurley any day of the week. I can't take Todd Gurley. I think that's the right process. The result might change, might show that I'm dumb, but I'm staying away from this offense entirely. There's not a guy that I want. That does it for the questions though, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I feel like that was like a downer to end on. Me talking bad on Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley and Brett Favre. I'm sorry, guys. Woo. Anyway, I'll be back at least next week for a few podcasts. That's three. I think I'm doing three because of the NFL draft. I'll do... I have a topic that I'm going to do a solo pod with. I'm going to be talking to Sigmund Bloom. Everyone loves Sig. Another Yinzer. Two straight Yinzers on the podcast. That'll be great. And then on Friday, I'll do another mailbag episode. So that's three podcasts for the NFL draft next week. Remember, you can go subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud by searching NumberFire NFL Podcasts. Thanks, guys. Get ready for a slew of shows next week before and after the draft. I'll talk to you then.